So what does wellness mean to you?
Welcome back to Wellness Wednesdays. I'm your host, Eric Collard. This week, another special guest. This lady has done it all, and now she's trying to take care of herself a little bit more. We're going to get to hear all about that and some more. Welcome to the podcast, Robin.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So before we get started on all of the crunchy stuff,
yeah,
give us kind of the Coles notes of where you came from, how you got into wellness, all that stuff.
So my fitness journey, I go from fitness to like health journey. Fitness journey started in 2009 when...
I love fitness in
quotations. Yeah.
For people that can't see at home.
Yeah. I had started to get skinny fat. So that was like the vain reason that got me into working out and learning how to eat better. I was dating a guy at the time who told me I was getting a little chunky. And was getting cellulite on my legs. And I was like, what are you talking about?
Honesty.
I had been a dancer my whole life. And
what kind of dance?
Ballet to begin with. Dance.
I'm more of a jazz man myself.
Jazzercise.
Yeah.
And then I had done like dance clubs in university, musical theater. And then I was a CFL cheerleader for 2 years.
Oh, yeah?
So I had this like vain part of me, like you do your hair and makeup every single day because you're going to be
calendars.
Seen in the public eye. Yeah. Calendars. Oh dear.
We can do a whole podcast on just that, but we won't.
And I remember that I also had seen a picture. It was the semifinals or whatever, and we were in the changing room. We had just won or whatever, and I was sitting in just like kind of like hunched over, and I had like a belly roll over like my pants. And
I was
like, it was horrendous. Yeah. Like my world was ending. Yeah. Because you live in a world of flat stomachs. And the guy made a comment and like, enough is enough. I have to take care of myself. I joined a boot camp in Toronto at the time called Hourglass Workout. And all of the girls were training for fitness competitions. So I was like, okay, me too. Raised my hand, started training with them really religiously. And it is like fitness competitions are a religious kind of institution. You know, you call them two-a-days. You have to do like cardio in the morning, on fasted. And then you have to do your workouts and your weights later in the day. You have to burn so many calories, eat so many calories. Like it's very
sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, it was fun at the time for a certain reason. Like I needed that goal to get somewhere. I needed to learn how to educate myself. So I learned how to train. I hired trainers. I learned how to eat clean, again, quotations. Because that was the kind of moniker at the time. And from there, I evolved into a health journey. So I started realizing that wasn't really a healthy industry to be in.
You start with yourself's not that healthy?
While
you're working
out. The calories weren't really reduced, but it was deprivation dieting. So it was eating only certain foods to a point where like most fitness competitors talk about how they can't eat tilapia and asparagus after, because that's all they eat for 3 months. Like, welcome to the world of no nutrients. Yeah. So I started working with a naturopath at the time, and that was kind of my first foray into the health world and wondering like, oh, there's something more to this. So from the fitness journey to the health journey, while I was doing this, I was working full time and I had developed this kind of personal brand moniker. And that became sort of like my identity throughout the process. I started building a personal brand on a blog, just my name, robinbaldwin.com, talking about my training pursuits and how I take care of myself. And it was all about like balancing a full-time job and this fitness pursuit and being able to like do both and have it all kind of mentality. And from there, my health journey became much more about holistic health when I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis in 2014. And I had switched in 2013 around that time, so a year before, from fitness competitions to obstacle course racing. And so my kind of health journey over the past few years has been how to train and live well with multiple sclerosis while still going after these like epic race goals. So that was kind of the transition.
Can you share with us a couple of those epic races that you've done?
Yeah.
Because people love to hear like the grueling details of...
I think I started really small. So like I started with like, we call it the entry level drug into obstacle course racing is Warrior Dash.
Yeah.
So I did that and I was like, oh, I'm like, fairly fast. Like, I've never been I've never considered myself an athlete. So then it was like, okay, maybe I'll try Tough Mudder the next year because that's a longer distance. Still not timed, so yeah. I'm not really racing. And then went into Spartans. So again, started with the smaller, shorter distances, did the sprints, did a super the next year, and then tackled my first beast. And that's kind of the longest OCR I've done, but I tackled my first beast in 2015, so the year after I was diagnosed with MS. And was told, based on how I train and how I live with MS, if I get overheated, I get symptoms. So a lot of my friends are slightly epic racers and are always, you know, podiuming and in, you know, like top 10 of the elite heat. And they're like, oh, you might be out on course for like, you know, 9 to 10 hours for a beast. So prepare, make sure you have enough fuel. It was actually here in Ottawa. I was living in Toronto at the time, drove in, it was Mont-Saint-Marie, and I was only on course for 6 hours. And I had my right hand had actually been stung by a wasp the day before. It was completely swollen to like 3 times the size. So I wasn't able to do any of the grip obstacles. And so I knew I was gonna have to do burpees the entire time, whenever, like monkey bars, rope climb, whatever.
Do you like burpees?
I hate burpees. Okay. Burpees makes my symptoms worse because it's just like, it's like pure exertion in the heat. But for some reason, because I mentally knew I was going to have to do the burpees, I didn't have as adverse a reaction as I might have if I like failed an obstacle and then had to do the burpees. So I finished, I think I did like 300 burpees that day, but finished in 6 hours. And I remember running up towards the finish line. My friends always finish like 2 to 3 hours ahead of me. And I remember them standing there and they looked at, I remember them all looking at their watches and were like, she's done? Like she's done. And then they got all excited. And I was like, yeah, that was probably one of my proudest moments was that race. And I've done other beasts. I've gone down to Vermont, the birthplace of Spartan, and done their beast. I've done the beast at Owl's Head last year. So I've done 3 beasts in total, and that's enough for me.
Which one was the toughest?
Oh, I would say Owl's Head last year. So I was on course for 7.5 hours. I didn't have water for 4.5 hours. So the last 2 beasts I've done, and I've talked very publicly about this. I've even talked to the new owner of Spartan Canada, but they kept running out of water 2 races back to back. And that's,
you would think they would learn.
You would think, yeah. So their operations guys.
Yeah, they charge a lot of money for that.
Yeah, so I've actually publicly said I'm not going to run another Spartan race unless they can actually promise me they won't run out of water. I know how to race with MS so that I don't overheat, and that involves going to water stations and dumping water on the back of my neck. Like, it's just something I need.
Yeah.
And so I've actually publicly said on my blog, like, I won't do it again.
But have they reached out to you since?
Joe DeSena, founder, was actually here in Ottawa for the Activate Expo.
Okay.
He came down to do kind of like a little thing and introduce the new owner of Spartan Canada. So the former owners have sold the franchise, and it's now a new guy. And I personally talked face to face with him. I was like, I want to do these races, but based on my health, I need to take care of myself. And just like normal Joe Blow, no autoimmune disease, shouldn't be racing without water. I know, like, the Spartan mentality is, you know, do hard things. Definitely the suck it up mentality. But there's also a reality of taking care of yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and then how have you transformed the last couple of years? I know you've had some major transformations since then too.
So I think the biggest thing was I had done the fitness competition journey to get into vein shape. Like, I wanted to look good. And as I was training, I realized I was getting so much confidence in the gym. Like, I was definitely like the girl when I like walked into a gym, I was an elliptical bunny at first, like go to the elliptical, do an hour workout, leave. The first time I like walked into like a free weight section, it was terrifying. Like, now I understand and I have pure empathy for women. They're like, I can't go to the gym. Like, it's a scary place.
See, I come from football background. I've been working out since I was like, you know, 12 years old. So it's a totally different.
So
we love when there's more girls that can, but it doesn't happen very often.
One of my good friends at McMaster was Jesse Lumsden.
Yeah.
I followed him around the gym. He doesn't actually know this. Yeah. I would follow him around the gym and just like copy whatever machine machine he was on to teach. But that was like the start of me teaching myself. Yeah. And I did that later on in gyms. Like I would follow people that looked like they were knew what they were doing so that I could like, oh, how does that machine? Oh, that's how it works. Okay. And then another reason why I hired a trainer.
Sorry, my brain kind of goes all over the place.
Yeah.
And I'm a chronic interrupter, but you ever seen those epic fail videos of like people using the gym equipment wrong the wrong way?
Yeah. Imagine I had followed one of those guys around, it would have been dangerous.
Yeah. Sorry, go on.
So I like, then I was just like, I'm going to hire a trainer. Let me hire somebody who knows what they're doing, teach me. So I had a few trainers kind of over the years. I was still doing the Hourglass workout because it was an amazing bodyweight workout, great social community in Toronto. And one day, my mom was like my biggest supporter. She came to all of my competitions, you know. And the weirdest thing is that you put on stripper heels to go on stage for a fitness competition, and then you're like, your parents are watching you in the audience.
Yeah. That's my girl.
That's my girl in those stripper heels. And she goes, when are you going to do something with the newfound strength you've gained from the gym instead of prancing around on stage in a bikini?
Wow. I like your mom.
Wow. Okay. Like just set up.
Tell me how you really feel.
Yeah. So I think it was the same year where I just like tried the Warrior Dash. Yeah. I'm like, oh, this is really cool. And then I actually went through a year where I kind of like stopped all fitness. I left a very toxic relationship at the time and really kind of lost myself, gained a whole bunch of emotional eating weight.
Was you hanging out with your good friend Ben and Jerry?
Ben and Jerry. What else was it? Pizza. Pizza was like my comfort food. And I remember when I left the relationship, one of my healing techniques was making these seasonal bucket lists. I had one for summer. I had one for winter. And on my summer bucket list, I kept putting on neat races that I wanted to try. So I had like Color Run, Foam Fest, my first half marathon, first Tough Mudder, stuff like that. So I just kind of like dipped my toes in all the different kind of race series that were out there. But training for, I found a really neat training facility in Toronto called Oak Course, and you actually like ran like a very smaller sized obstacle course race down by the Cherry Beach down there. And I remember feeling like so empowered that I could do it. And I was also like a pretty big girly girl, especially going from like ballerina to fitness competitor. Like getting dirty and muddy.
Oh no.
It was just like, I was like, oh, but I didn't actually like, I loved it. Like I was like, oh, this is cool. Like I'm not being all like, ooh, I don't want to get into the mud. Like I actually absolutely loved it. And then I found a training facility, no longer exists, but it was called Alpha Obstacle Training. And the community that was built there, it was just people that like always high-fived you no matter like how bad the workout was, or they didn't care how you performed. Like it was just an amazing community. And it was that like coming out of a toxic relationship and needing to belong somewhere positive just kind of like sucked me in. Everybody started doing races. It was one of those things where it's like, okay, which races are you doing this year? Let's map out our year. Okay, road trip to Montreal. Who's road tripping there? Like, who's getting the Airbnb? Like, it was just a really cool community. So I ended up doing 20 races the year after my diagnosis.
Wow.
I had signed up for 15 even before, like, October, November is your planning season. I was diagnosed in December. And I said, okay, I'm still going to do all of them. And even ended up signing up for more throughout the year because you didn't want to miss out on a road trip. So,
yeah, it's funny. When I was doing the triathlon Ironman, it was like, yeah, it was, you know, New Year's Day, you know, you look up, okay, what's the year going to have? Now it's like, I look at every month, maybe like, oh, what do I want to do this month? And now it's mostly a lot of leisure stuff, like cycling trips with my brother. And, but it's funny how, like, different stages of your life, you have different priorities.
Yeah, so like there is like an epic push here, and I call it the like I need to prove that I'm stronger than MS year. Like I needed to prove that like I could still do everything despite having symptoms. I think there was also a fear of like, what if I become disabled in the future? You know, I'm not disabled right now, so why not go kind of like balls to the wall, do everything possible. Because there's always kind of that fear, even though I'm super healthy, no disability, barely any symptoms unless I'm running a beast with no water. There's still always kind of that fear in the back of your head saying, like, when might it get bad? So, yeah.
And now you're known as a work-life balance person, guru.
I call myself a work-life harmony strategist.
Oh, wow. That sounds really...
It sounds really
synergy? You should put synergy in there, too.
Yeah, synergistic strategist.
Yeah.
No, but synergy is part of my definition of being an alpha female.
Okay.
Yeah. So I have it. Okay. It's good. In there.
So what does that mean for in everyday language?
So it started out as somebody that worked full-time in the advertising world or marketing world. But it was also able to fit in fitness. So that was like the initial iteration. And then when I started all these side hustles from, you know, blogging 3 times a week, then I started my podcast. I have a network marketing business. When I started doing all these little things, it became more like, okay, work-life balance doesn't exist. Like, I can't have 50% work, 50% life. Like, it just doesn't work that way, because before work and after work, I'm still doing quote-unquote work things that are my side hustle passions. So how does it just be named slightly differently so it's not, I guess, causing people to be upset? Because work-life balance is going to upset you if you don't have that balance. If you're always striving for the balance, it's just not going to happen. And it doesn't happen. Whether or not you take care of yourself on a daily basis or have different seasons in life, doesn't happen. So when you say you set your priorities, whether they are in work or in life categories, and as they all flow together and, you know, you put your blinders on, do what you love, you go after your goals and dreams while making sure you're happy and healthy at the same time, then you found work-life harmony.
It's not easy, and I mean, it's something I'm still striving for.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't have a 9-to-5 job. I've got a couple businesses.
Yeah.
I still try to be fit and be healthy.
Yeah.
Because yeah, like when I was working 9-to-5 and doing Ironman, it was cool because it kind of fit together. It's like I would work hard and I would train hard and I wouldn't really play hard because I was too tired by then. But it was it was a cool part of my life, but it wasn't sustainable.
Yeah.
Whereas now, as I'm getting very old, I have white hair now in my beard, but I really want something sustainable. So like the work-life balance, and people like always make fun, oh, it's different, you have your own business, you can golf on a Sunday afternoon or Friday afternoon. Yeah, but there's lots of give and takes.
Yeah, I interview a lot of entrepreneurs who have a really hard time setting work hours when they work for themselves, because anybody in the corporate world is stuck to a desk from a certain time to time, and then we can, you know, time block our morning, noon, and night, I like to call it. But for an entrepreneur, if you don't set the right boundaries, then like throw a whole bunch of work into your life, and even if it totally fills you up and you love it and it's your passion, if you aren't doing the self-care practices or healthy habits, then you're gonna suffer.
I find like that self-care really makes a big difference. You know, taking an hour in the morning to do some stuff for myself, whether it's blogging or meditation, yoga, a quick workout, that really sets my day nicely. But yeah, like some days, my days don't end till 10 or 11.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I try to balance it out, so my days end at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
So I think as a self-employed person, it is a little tougher because you're right, like there are no set boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, and it's hard sometimes. Like, and sometimes when I'm really in the flow, I'll just keep going because it just feels so good. And then I look at my watch, like 10 o'clock, I should probably get to bed.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then it's hard to go from like working, like, you know, to going to sleep right away. So you, like, now I've gotten to a wind down stage. And
that's one of my favorite questions that I ask my podcast guests is, how do you, I said, if you've built up any stress throughout the day, some of them are like, I have no stress.
Yeah.
Like, good for you.
Yeah.
You just know how to deal with it. You have stress.
Yeah.
We
all have stress.
You've learned to process it properly.
If you don't have stress, then you're not growing.
Yeah. Or you're just so complacent.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I asked them, like, if you've built up stress, how do you wind down at night? And it's fascinating, though, like, my demographic, I'm interviewing all females, the alpha female kind of personality. And the majority of them like have to take that Epsom salt bath.
Yeah.
And it's just like, for me, I started that in my life because it was a signal to my body, like, shut down.
Yeah.
Like, just power down now.
Yeah. I do that with tea now. It's herbal
okay.
tea.
Yeah. For some people, you know, put the screens away, pick up a book. So it's just like that one action that once you do it repetitively enough, your body is trained to know that that's shut down and relaxation yeah. time. So, yeah, I love it. It's fascinating. Like, so we've just thrown out the word self-care.
Yeah.
I find that people have such a different definition of self-care.
So there's like, a Dove thing. Isn't it using Dove products as self-care?
Maybe not.
Yeah.
But some people, like a lot of women will name spa-like activities. So like a self-care is like going for a manicure, pedicure, or going to the spa for a massage. Now in like the wellness world, people are throwing out meditation, or
flotation tanks.
Flotation tanks is a new one. Yeah. Salt rooms I've seen become, very popular.
So how do you define self-care?
Self-care is, healthy habits that I do daily or monthly, like with some sort of routine.
Such as?
I have like a team of healthcare practitioners that I see. So, you know, going for monthly acupuncture, which is the best nap in the abs, like in the entire world. Then I have deep tissue massage from an athletic standpoint, fixing all my broken muscles from all the fitness endeavors. And then I have like an energy type worker for massage. But then it's, yeah, daily habits. So Epsom salt baths, journaling, playing with my puppies, gratitude practice with my boyfriend. Every single night we share three things that we loved about the day and that we're grateful for. So it's like those things that I know are taking care of my mental health as well as my physical health. So that's what self-care to me is.
The cool thing is I'm seeing a lot of people, especially recently, talking about mental health and like putting that in the equation.
Mm.
So I think if we would have done this podcast 10 years ago, it'd be like, I have bigger biceps, you know, like I'm healthier or fitter.
Yeah.
Whereas now I think people are really seeing like, because most people, I mean, I won't spoil it, but I ask people how I end the show by asking people how they define wellness.
Mm.
And like most people are now.
Now I'm going to sit here.
Yeah. Yeah, but it, like now, like mental is part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
Or people are just bullshitting me. But like everyone's like almost every single guest has brought it up. So it's because whereas I think, especially when I first started working out playing football, it was all like about strength and this and that. Like there's no like you know especially I don't know maybe it's a man thing, but we didn't talk about mental health.
No.
Like. Playing like university football, it's like no, just suck it up. Like it just
right.
Yeah, like it's. But I think now it's very different. And then, I mean, and there's a time and place for like you can't always like. Well, I don't really feel like doing this. It's like well, no, you have to suck it up sometimes. But
yeah,
it's a tough balance.
Yeah, and I will give like corporate capitalism with like Bell Let's Talk Day.
Yeah.
Big props for the conversations that they do start and how open people. Become one day a year. Many other people are very open about their mental health and how they take care of themselves. I've talked about being in therapy for the past 4 years, but that was scary to start. So it's always scary to be vulnerable in this world because vulnerability is usually seen as weakness. And Brene Brown has done amazing work around yeah. shame and guilt.
Yeah.
But there's still, like, even when you're working through something, it's really hard to talk about it because you haven't figured it out yet. But to share that vulnerability with people opens it up so that they're like, oh, you know what, I've been really, is this, like, I've been dealing with anxiety. I didn't even think I was dealing with anxiety. I thought I was just crazy. And, like, people throw crazy around and see it as something negative. Like,
yeah.
I call myself crazy all the time in a very loving and positive way,
yeah.
Or dealing with my crazy. But it's just like words can really affect people in different ways. And so I think that's why mental health is a really hard conversation to have because not everyone has had the same experiences. Not everyone has the same coping mechanisms. And not everyone understands how somebody is going through something, how we process things differently. But it is cool that it's becoming more of a conversation. My only fear, and I find this on some of my podcast episodes, is that people say something to like appear a certain way. Like when I ask them how do they wind down at night and relax, I feel like they're giving me like the standard checklist that everybody does.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, I just want people to be honest.
Yeah. I drink myself to bed most nights. So, yeah.
Like the best is like when some of my guests have been like, I didn't really want to say this, but like I watched Netflix with my boyfriend. And like, but that's your reality. Yeah. Like you're using escapism to relax.
Yeah.
That is awesome. So many people do it, whether it's TV or books or whatever.
Yeah.
Like just be honest with your methods, because every like one thing will work for some people.
Yeah.
Whereas like something else will resonate with somebody else. So that's why I love getting so many different walks of life on the show. Is because something will resonate with at least one of my listeners. So
yeah, and that's why I love having a podcast about wellness, because wellness is everyone can kind of relate to that. I mean, and again, some people relate more to certain. And I get emails saying, "Oh, I love this episode," or "I love this episode." So it's always nice to have a variety of guests and perspectives on this.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I want to touch base before we kind of wind down here is. How, like just going through the mental state, like MS it's not easy.
No.
How did you deal with that?
I say that I went through all four stages of grief in the hospital the night of my diagnosis, and I went straight to acceptance. That was like the overachiever A-type personality.
Really? I could never see that.
Going like, I don't want to deal with the bad stuff.
Yeah.
But for some reason, and it has served me well, I just decided to say, okay, I have this. I call it my sidekick. I have this sidekick that is going to show me how to take better care of myself. If I take better care of myself, then I won't have to deal with all the nasty parts of the disease, potentially. So that's why I decided to just go straight to acceptance. I have two friends that are grief counselors, and they said, don't worry, you'll go through the other stages later.
Yeah.
And I was like, shut up. I don't want to hear that. Like,
yeah.
I didn't want to hear that I needed to be sad or that I needed to be angry. And it's manifested in different ways. But it's still terrifying some days. Like, I'll be out on course feeling symptoms coming on, and I get like a woe is me mentality because I can't keep up with my friends who are elite racers. I'm all by myself on the mountain. I'm starting to like lose vision in my right eye. My right hand's tingling. And I just like, I get really, really mad at myself. And I've realized that my biggest struggle with MS is I haven't given myself any grace. I haven't learned how to be kinder. I've learned how to take really good care of myself. But if I don't do the million and one things that I know will support my body, I get really mad at myself for not being the overachiever in MS.
I was going to say, isn't that the overachiever?
It totally is.
Yeah.
Like if I don't take all my supplements for the day, I don't get my 8 hours, if I don't eat proper autoimmune paleo protocol, if I don't meditate in the morning, which I'm struggling with, if I don't learn how to deal with the stress at work, and I get all this anxiety from other people's problems. If I don't do all those things to-do list checker off or extraordinaire, if I don't check off all the things, I get really mad at myself because I know if I do all the things, I'll be okay. So I'm working through with my therapist quite a lot, like learning how to be really kind to myself. I don't know how to, and I'm okay saying that because I'm also obsessed with self-development, and I'm obsessed with never being complacent. So I love that I have stuff to quote unquote work on, because it makes life interesting.
Yeah. And I think it's the beauty of A-type people, but it's also the fallback, because I never really realized I'm an A-type until, you know, I kind of slapped in the face of it. So it's one of those things, I think of myself as a pretty chill guy.
Yeah.
But it's the same thing. Like, I have a list of, like, 12 things to do. If I don't do all 12, like, I'm pissed.
Yeah.
So it's, I think I'm, like, a closeted A-type person that I can come off, like, pretty chill. So
chill.
But people don't really look at me as, like, oh, like, I'm not, you know, the typical A-type person.
Yeah.
And especially since now, like, I don't really race much anymore. It's more of a casual, but yeah, you're right. Like, I think having self-acceptance, self-grace is tough, but it's definitely part of the equation.
About a year and a half into my diagnosis, I read the book When the Body Says No by Gabor Mate, who's a doctor out west in Canada. And he actually has seen a ton of patients, so he has quantitatively and qualitatively kind of grouped them together. Chapter on MS people. Majority of them have been in a toxic relationship, don't know how to deal with their emotions or process them properly, and are overachievers, A-type personalities that like go, go, go. And when I read that, I just like had a massive aha moment. I was like, oh, so all of these things about my personality and my emotional state of wellness have potentially, have potentially contributed to me being further along the autoimmune spectrum than just, you know, genetically running my family or me having a, you know, polymorphism in my genome that means I can't absorb vitamin D properly. So like there's the scientific reasons why I may have this disease. It's also such a confusing disease because it's a snowflake disease. No one has the same symptoms or it doesn't affect them the same way. There's no cause, there's no cure type mentality. So like I can kind of have all these things in my head go that, oh, maybe all of these things contributed to my body being unwell. Okay, now I just need to learn how to deal with them. So I like that. That can be really overwhelming to somebody that doesn't like the challenge. But I like that I can now, you know, process past grief and trauma that I may not have processed properly. I can learn how to actually feel feelings instead of bottling them up and pushing them down. So I like the challenge.
I've heard about the feelings thing. I'm still working on that.
But, yeah.
Well, first of all, major kudos for doing all that stuff. And, you know, we've only gotten to know each other for a few months, but very inspiring. And especially considering most people are incredibly healthy and they do well, or can be completely healthy and they just sit on the couch and watch Netflix all the time. Like, it's okay to watch Netflix once in a while, but if this is like your nightly ritual, is watching Netflix and having a TV dinner, again, I don't want to be too preachy, but that might not be the best situation for everyone. So
I've been getting really judgy lately, and it's been really difficult for me. I get so mad at myself for being judgy, but if I see somebody who has the knowledge and the know-how to take care of themselves and they don't, I get really, really mad. Again, exploring it in therapy.
Yeah. Yeah.
But she asked, she's like, is it because that like they could proactively take care of themselves so they never have an autoimmune disease? I'm like, yes, because I wish I had known all those things. So I'm technically kind of mad at myself, and really they're just mirrors back. Yeah. But it's really hard to see people not taking care of themselves.
So you never eat poutine or pizza? Or?
I did have vegan poutine last weekend.
And
it was sweet potato fries, mushroom gravy, obviously no gluten, and cashew cheese.
And?
It was so heavy in my stomach, spectacular, and awful all at the same time. So I broke my no, technically paleo because it was sweet potato. But
Well, one more, actually a couple more questions before we end this. I want to be respectful of your time here. I know you're a busy lady. I know you still got the work, you got the work life harmony, but I want to keep that harmony going. I alluded to this earlier. What does wellness mean to you?
I think it's being able to have the healthy habits in your life daily, weekly, monthly that are going to give you the most energy to tackle all of the goals and dreams in your life. And it's holistic in nature, from nutrition to exercise to stress reduction to informed medical care to removing toxins from your life, whether that is physical or emotional.
Toxic.
I try not to use the word toxic people though anymore, because it's projecting really like a lot of negativity onto other people. But it really is such like a holistic wheel of so many things. Like our body is like a chain reaction. Like if something's wrong somewhere, there's problems everywhere else. And problem with Western medicine is it only treats one thing. So I work with a lot of Eastern medicine practitioners that want to find the root cause and address like the whole system. So I think wellness is addressing the entire system.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. I like it. If people want to find out more, where can they get you? I know you've only got probably about 12 or 13 URLs to run off, but the best way to get a hold of you?
The best way is robinbaldwin.com, because all the social media profiles are linked from there.
Mm-hmm. And which one's your favorite social media platform?
I'm really liking Instagram and Instagram stories. So okay. Instagram is like the pretty picture that like shows everybody that your life is all together.
Yeah.
But I'm super awkward and weird on Instagram stories, and I'm having a lot of fun sharing my personality that way.
Okay.
Yeah.
One day I will get on Instagram. I don't know if I'm the right demographic. I think it's, but we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm more of a Twitter guy, but.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Twitter is dying a really slow death.
Yeah, but I still love.
But I feel
I'm
like
going down. It's like I'm still.
But Twitter
have BlackBerry
is like
also.
You can. But so it's still the same thing. Like Twitter is the 140 characters. Instagram stories is like 8 to 10 seconds, where it's like you got to get your message across in that amount of time. Yeah. So it's just you just have to put your face.
I think Instagram knows mostly selfies, so I'm trying not to do that. But.
Yeah, the stories is being able to actually tell cool stories with your community tribe.
Cool. That's awesome. Again, thanks a lot for sharing all that wonderful stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And look forward to maybe after some races this year.
Summer, yeah.
Yeah, maybe we can do a part two. So.
Sounds good. Yeah. Thank you for having me on.
No problem.
You've been listening to Wellness Wednesdays. I'm your host, Eric Collard. Until next week, be well.